Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and my next guest is Hilton Alls. He's a staff writer and theater critic at The New Yorker magazine. Maybe you see his stuff in The New Yorker. And he has a new book of essays titled White Girls, a term he uses literally and figuratively, writing about people from Flannery O'Connor to Michael Jackson, as well as to signify outsider status, something he probably knows about as a gay black man. Hilton Alls, welcome back to WNYC. Thanks for coming on today.
Thank you, Brian, for having me.
The LA Times review of your book says White Girls is about white girls, like your previous book, The Women, written 15 years ago, was about femininity, which is to say quite a lot and not at all. Do you like that description?
I think that essay is just one of the best things that's ever been written about the ways in which I approach a subject, which is sideways, up and down, and not full on directly, because I don't think that there's lots of truth to be had when you're looking at something plain.
So, for example, you write that, quote, Truman Capote became a woman in 1947.
Yes, when he had that famous photograph on the back of Other Voices, Other Rooms, his first novel, we see him lying on a sofa looking provocatively at the photographer, and it was just one instance, a very powerful instance of a gay man transforming himself before the camera to become something as delectable and consumable as a woman.
And you talk about how Michael Jackson has been called a white woman. In what context was that?
Those were in the gay bars in the 1980s. In New York, there were places like Uncle Charlie's, and there were big video screens. And on those big video screens, often there were duets that he used to do with Diana Ross. And there was this strange amalgamation of things going on there, one of which was that he appropriated Judy Garland's wardrobe, a black sequin vest or jacket, and Diana Ross simultaneously was known as a white woman because she had crossed over and wasn't so quote-unquote black-sounding as she was a kind of crossover icon. So in calling Jackson a white woman, it was describing his identification with Diana Ross and also his feeling or identification with former female stars like Judy Garland.
And so Truman Capote and Michael Jackson are clues to what you mean by your title, White Girls?
Yes. The title came about because when I used to work in fashion, I would be backstage, and I always noticed that the bookers and managers would refer to black models as the black girls. And I never heard them say that about white models. So what if we turned that phrase around and examined what that phrase meant? What does a white girl mean, and where is she in today's society? As we know, many, many women, I heard in your previous section, are the head of the household now. So does that mean that white women / girls are part of the status quo, or are they still marginalized despite the fact that they're head of the household?
And you also write about Eminem, the white rapper from Detroit.
He's not a white girl, but his mother is. Huh. And that's really the essay is about his relationship to his mother, who was a kind of hysteric, as we all know. And I think it was her hysteria and love of language that really informed his own. But because he's an uncle, he was able to discipline that.
And
so she is the white girl in that section.
And you refer to him consistently in that essay as Marshall Mathers, his real name, not Eminem.
Yes, because I think that when you have a mother that powerful, you'll just always be her little boy, no matter what you say on an album about her. And he was very, very close, complicatedly close to his mother, And so I just wanted to examine that relationship and to see how it informed his music.
And you say he's not a white artist stealing from black music, as has happened other times in history and even presently, because he's not, it's not like he wants to be black, quote, like some sad inner city Elvis.
Right. I think that he was talking, I think his music really is about emotional identification with blackness without, without transgressing the respect that he has for black culture and black artists. I think he's joining in, but I don't think that he wants to be that and popularize it without acknowledging his past.
And yet, as interestingly to me, you write, Mathers never claimed whiteness and its privileges as his birthright because he didn't feel white and privileged.
That's right. He grew up very, very sort of, we know the backstory from 8 Mile, but he was a very poor kid and whose father was not present. His mother was a kind of hysteric, and he was a very sort of isolated kid who liked to read the dictionary and watch TV, cartoons. And I think that those two sources really contributed to his sensibility, along with his mother's very sort of vivid imagination.
Listeners, we have a few minutes. If anybody wants to call in real quick with a question for Hilton Alls, maybe you read him in The New Yorker, sometimes in the New York Review of Books. His new collection of essays is called White Girls, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Do you think actual white girls recognize themselves in Truman Capote or Michael Jackson, or would they dispute that characterization the way many women are confused by how drag queens define femininity, perhaps?
Right. Well, that's a very interesting question, Brian, but I'm not a huge proponent of drag as a way of expressing something about gender. I think that drag is really about the person who's doing the drag. So they're men talking about their relationship to their ideas about femininity or femaleness. I think, similarly, I wouldn't take this book as a definitive statement about my relationship to white women or sexuality or gender. I think it's a book about the ways in which we are defined and the ways in which we try not to be. Some people welcome definition. I think Michael Jackson was looking for that kind of parenting ultimately, and some people ultimately reject it. I think you see that in the Truman Capote essay, for instance, where he goes from trying to idealize himself as a white girl to becoming a competitive male. I think further on, people like Flannery O'Connor resisted being categorized in any way. So there are lots of people in the book that I discuss who really sort of refute the categorization, and I really love those people.
You also write about white editors' interest in hiring black writers to explain their race, which to me recalls Baratunde Thurston and his book How to Be Black, and you know, which addresses that issue with a massive sense of humor. And you use loaded language in your take on this. For example, quote, for them, a black writer is someone who can simplify what is endemic to him or her as a human being, race, and blow it up to cartoon proportions, thereby making, quote, the coon situation, as you call it, clear to a white audience. Why did you put it that way?
Because I was writing in that context about lynching photographs, and I was asked by the editor of that book called Without Sanctuary, Lynching Photographs in America, to write an essay about the pictures, and I was so angry that I was asked that that's what I came up with. I don't think that being black qualifies me to understand or have a particular take on black subject matter. I think that as a thinker and a thinker with a heart qualifies me to write about many things. So I felt very angry that the editor of that book had asked me based on my blackness to write about something that was so devastating to black people, and that was the loss of power and control and death. So that's why I wrote that piece. But in general, there used to be more of that, I think, in the 90s and 80s, where an editor would sort of typecast you. Because you were black, you could write about, let's say, Jean-Michel Basquiat, or because you were gay and black, you could write about Bruce Nugent or the Harlem Renaissance. I think that those categorizations have really kind of splintered and are disappearing slowly. I'm very fortunate to work at a place where I'm only asked to be myself.
Let me take a phone call for you. Alice in Bernardsville. You're on WNYC with Hilton Alls. Hi, Alice.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Hilton, I want to thank you. I'm about to get my hands on your work. And
yes.
I currently live in Bernardsville. I was born and raised in Weehawken.
Uh-huh.
I attended Stanford. I lived in their black theme house, Ujima. And uh-huh. The things that you talked about, and I apologize for my daughter crying in the background, but the things you talked about, Eminem sort of...
were you telling
rapper, a, not really identifying with or not wanting to be considered African-American, but through his work showing
right.
how he reveres black culture. Again,
I'm going to try to get
similar experiences with that. And
just for brevity,
thank you for being on and exposing us.
Did you yes. tell my screener that you feel as an Armenian American that you're sort of white but not white?
Oh yeah, I mean I've been referred to as a sand nigger growing up, so I know I'm not white, but you know in terms of what to.
And we've now had a baby and a cockatiel make their radio debuts on the show today. But Hilton, go ahead.
That's a very interesting thing that you're saying, because the man that I write about in the first section of the book was very, very much involved very early on with an Armenian-American woman who identified with him. He's a black man, identified with him because of the sort of political genocide of Armenians and also this sort of cultural marginalization in America. So I understand what you're saying is that you're reaching out of your sense of identification, and I think that my friend would agree with that.
We have about a minute left, and Alice, thank you so much for your call, and good luck with your daughter.
Yes.
Maybe I can get one little piece of current theater criticism out of you, because I think your latest New Yorker piece is a review of Shakespeare's Twelfth Night, which includes cross-dressing and impersonation in the plot, and is performed,
yeah.
in this case, by an all-male troupe, the way Shakespeare
yeah.
was originally performed, a production that would seem right in the wheelhouse of the things you write about. And you call it grand and unsurpassing. So worth seeing?
It is. Please, please, please go see Twelfth Night. It is one of the most extraordinary productions I've ever seen. You don't have to go see Richard III, but you have to see Twelfth Night.
You wrote that after seeing the production, you kept asking, how did he construct such a popular work out of outsider thoughts about gender and cross-dressing? Like
That's
what,
right.
if you can do it in 30 seconds?
How did he do it or why?
Either.
He did it because he was able to make the imaginative leap into other people's lives. That's what makes a great writer.
And there we leave it with Hilton Alls, whose theater and other criticism you can read in The New Yorker. And his new collection of essays, his new book, is called White Girls. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Brian. See you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC.